Welcome back to Building Better Basketball, the Basketball Australia Coaches Podcast. I'm Neil Gray, the Community Capability and Education Manager for Basketball Australia. I'm joined today by someone many of you will not be aware of, unless you've read friend of the podcast, Cody Royal's latest book, Second Set of Eyes. Crystal Kua was a state rugby player in New Zealand and represented the New Zealand Maori Sevens side. Crystal, though, found her real passion in coaching and along with her husband started a coaching journey which took them all around the world. Crystal has a fascinating story, which I can't wait to dive into. Welcome to Building Better Basketball, Crystal.
Awesome to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit, I guess, about your journey from being a player into that transition into coaching, especially like the diverse experiences that you've had as soon as you went into coaching?
Yeah, I actually have always coached from as far back as I can remember. I was at high school, I coached the younger teams. And then when I was in university, I coached school teams. And so alongside playing, I've always coached something. And as a, you know, without ever having the dream of becoming a full-time professional coach, it was literally a sport really changed my life. And I always say sport saved me, and I just wanted to be able to be that for other kids. And so my love of coaching has definitely come from coaching school-aged kids through high school. Touch is where I first started coaching. And so I coached schoolboys, St. Paul's Collegiate to start with touch, and then went into St. Peter's mixed touch. And so probably my love for the underdog story. We had never we'd never qualified the first year I went into coaching St. Peter's touch, and we'd never qualified for a nationals. So that was the first goal, and qualified in 20th spot to go to nationals and ended up winning the national championship and touch, mixed touch for St. Peter's, and top three for 3 years in a row as a high school touch coach. And so I think that early win with the underdogs, you know, not your stereotypical touch players, pretty much cemented my love for coaching and seeing people achieve things that they never thought they could. And then followed that through with 5 years coaching high school rugby alongside my husband at Hamilton Girls High. And so, yeah, I think it was a good 9 years of coaching school-age kids in touch and rugby, which was that, you know, set the, I suppose, the learnings and the love of what I do now.
So question without notice, Crystal, I had some experience seeing the size of the boys that you're talking about at the schools that you would work at, and I'm sure people have an understanding of the kind of size of the average New Zealand rugby player. Like being the head coach of these big units at rugby, what were some of those challenges?
I've never seen it like that personally, because I think I've got two brothers, and I'm the you know, the middle child of two boys, and my mum always made it really clear to me that, you know, if you want to go toe-to-toe in this world, you got to own your space. And so I think I was just brought up owning, you know, owning that space, and not seeing myself as different to, you know, I think it's more the outside world looking in that I have to navigate. But personally myself, I've never seen that as a challenge. It's more me navigating how other people see it.
You hit the nail on the head, the outside perspectives, because I think many female coaches of basketball would feel that as well, potentially being towered over by these big basketball boys if they're cross-gender coaching. So I think that message of owning your own space is really powerful as well. Thanks for that. So one of the, I guess, perceptions, not only from Australia, but worldwide, is that teams like the Black Ferns and all the Maori teams in rugby have got some really strong, not only player development pathways, but also really put a focus on team culture as well. Your experience playing in those programs and being around those setups, how has that influenced your coaching philosophy?
I think that for me, I've always played well when I've felt good, you know, when I felt like I belong in a space. If I think any player, if you go, what's your favorite team you've ever been a part of? Like, it's not like, oh, that time I, you know, won that championship. Like, it'll be the way you won the championship, you know, and the way you felt within the space of winning that. And so creating spaces where people belong and feel connected to something, you know, is really important to me, because those are the pieces you remember. And using culture, and not just the Māori culture, but all different cultures that encompass a feeling of connectedness is really important, because I believe that when you know who you are and what you bring to the table and feel like you belong in a space, then you can be your very best, not just only as a coach, but for all your players and your staff. And so for me, I'm just constantly trying to create that.
When we think of culture, we often, it's often referred to probably ad nauseum with the All Blacks, and often kind of misquoted as that kind of no dickheads culture, which is like no one's bigger than the team and everyone's looking to kind of work together. And where basketball's obviously, rugby is predominantly focused, and it's focused on that kind of passing aspect, and there's the very different roles of forwards and backs, whereas the sevens kind of culture allows for a bit more kind of basketballness, where one player can kind of run and gun and take a bit more control over it. Do you have a different coaching philosophy for sevens to 15s?
No, my like, for me, I see rugby as a vehicle to change lives, and it's not you being the changer of the lives, but you giving the tools to have others change their own and be the very best they can be. And so for me, it's like sevens, it's like every player, if they can bring all their superpowers to the table, like their very best things, and you have all of that happening at once, you know, that's like the dream game, when everyone's at their very best, bringing their superpowers to the team for the team. And so it's not, it's looking inward, but it's for something bigger than yourself. And so it's the, how do you be your very best? And so me included, how do I be my very best, bring my very best pieces to the team for our team? And I think sevens or 15s, it's the same concept of maximizing the potential. And some people don't even know what their potential actually is. And so for me, it's seeing that, seeing what someone could be and helping them see that, and then helping give them the tools to be that.
So one of the quotes from the section of Cody's book that you did, I've written down, because it's something as a father that's coaching, it really echoed with me. And I think the most important thing is the order that you've put this in. So you mentioned in your discussion with Cody your aspiration to be an epic mom, wife, epic me, epic coach. And I think it's really powerful that you've, and I don't know whether you did it deliberately or whether that's just the way that it's kind of come out, but you went mom, wife, yourself, and then the coach was something that potentially happened as a result of being the epic one of all those three. As, and many of our listeners will be balancing all of those things, whether it's mom or husband or auntie or uncle or any kind of position of family responsibility, how do you manage to balance those different aspects of your life, and what kind of advice do you have for other coaches who are trying to maintain a balance between those competing needs?
I think the biggest thing for me is that I thought I was doing it early on in my career, but I wasn't. And it wasn't until I went to Japan, and Japan gave me time. Like, it was the first time in my life I was coaching and that was my job. And I wasn't, like, before I went to Japan, I was CEO of my own company, plus mum of two kids under five, plus coaching three teams, you know, I was doing everything. I was like superwoman to the rest of the world. But when I got to Japan, I realized like that I actually wasn't living my values for the people I cared about the most. I thought I was, and I used it as an excuse to not be as present as I should be because I was doing this for the family. But I always think like your calendar is a real reflection of who you are. And my calendar was rugby, rugby, rugby. And no matter, you know, what I say is the actions that you live. And it was confronting when I, you know, when I thought about it, it just gave me time. Japan gave me time to just think through what I was I living, what I was saying. And I was like, ultimately, I would never want my kids to see this version of me on TV of like giving everything I have to my players and not be able to say, that's my mum. Like, that's her in real life with us. She's the same person. And same with my husband. I was like, to be honest, no rugby championship would be worth it if they weren't by my side. And, you know, and if they couldn't look at me with the same eyes, you know, that same deep inner love and belief that they know, you know, I'd move heaven and earth for them because I was doing that daily. And so, you know, I've just really, I think it's far harder to, it's far, far harder to aim for epic mum, epic wife, epic me, epic coach. Like just being epic coach is actually a shit ton easier. Yeah. But, you know, when I'm had a big day and I get home, and I know, Crystal, you need to take your kids to the beach right now when it's the last thing, and you know, I really want to do because I'm tanked. But like, I know that I need to do that. And I get there and then life is good. You know, you're in the water, you're with your kids, you're playing, you switch off. And it's what's required as a coach as well. Like off needs to be off and on needs to be on. And so I've been actively doing everything I can to live that for the last, I think it's 7 years now, of and epic. What I love about epic is it's not perfect. Epic is the intent is all in. You know, I get it wrong all the time still, and my default is 100% head down, ass up work. You know, I'm just one of those people by nature, and so I have to force myself to stop in trying to live this version of myself, to stop and to take a minute, be present, you know, not have the laptop open at that time, not answer the calls at that time. But I think the beautiful thing I've noticed is if I do that as a head coach, I give permission for every single one of my team and management to do the same thing. And I think that's why I'm still in it, you know. Yeah. That's why I'm still in it and still in love with it. Like, I love coaching. Coaching is my happy place. It's the icing on the top. But, you know, but I don't think I could still be in it with the pressure that's involved in high performance sport. And, you know, if I wasn't doing it the way I'm doing it.
It's, I'm not to jump across another code. So from union to basketball, to draw another line to something that I'm sure some of our listeners will have seen on, whether it's in the news or on Twitter, Benji Marshall got a lot of media this week for, somehow it came out that he actually does between 5 and 7 p.m. actually turns his phone off and focuses in on his family and his kids. And there was a question as to, and it's the nature of professional sport when you're not winning games, whether he was truly committed to the West Tigers. And his response, rightly so, was, well, who else is doing their job 24 hours a day? Like, where does your ultimate responsibility lies. Not going to be the West Tigers coach for the rest of his life, but he's aiming to be a husband for the rest of his life, and obviously a father for the rest of his life. And his quote, sitting alongside your quote with Cody about normalizing family time during the season, I think is really powerful. And there's so many coaches that we've had on here who've talked about their family being their kind of core purpose, and their parents being someone that has been their greatest motivation to them. So paying that forward and repeating that action for your kids is really important. And having that work-life balance, just from a wellness point of view, like you said, so you can enjoy the icing on the cake and not have it turn to ash in your mouth, I suppose, because as you said, it's easy to be the epic coach because the wins deliver those, and the results can deliver that epic hit, but the demands of that job, the intensity of that job is also very fleeting and immediate, whereas the intensity of the three other roles is permanent and consistent.
I completely agree. And I was really lucky. Wayne Smith talked to me about how to keep the ones closest to you. He gave me the habits book, and he made me read it when I was a young coach, maybe 9 years ago. And then he's just always said, you have to, your family has to be prioritized. And, you know, he's like, I put a walk in with my wife at lunchtime in the middle of the day because no one will outwork me. So there's no question about whether I do the work or not. And I feel the same. I was like, I know when I'm on, and I work hard and I work fast and I'm good at what I do. And so there should be no shame in a walk at lunchtime with your partner. There should be no shame in dinner with your kids. There should be no shame in, I coach my under 12-year-olds touch team, and we've got, you know, we train on Sundays, my only day off, and we've got a tournament in 2 weeks in the middle of our season, like, and that's cool, and they're going to be on. You know, there should be no, like, that shouldn't be a bad thing. That's a great thing. And I think him saying that was a great thing early on in my career, and he's Wayne Smith, legend, meant it was really okay for it to be fine with me. And, you know, I've always just gone, well, if Wayne Smith can do it, I can do it. So, and not feel bad about it. And so I think it's, for me, just, I know that's what works for me. And it hasn't impacted my results over the years. And it's actually, I think it's the very thing that keeps me in love with what I still do.
How do you, again, another question without notes, Crystal, how do you change the gears between going from coaching the Super Rugby Chiefs side through to an under 12s touch side? How do you do that? Like, what's the process in your mind, like during a game? I mean, because it's easy to do at the start when you've got the little faces versus the big faces staring up at you, but in the heat of the game, in the moment, how's Crystal Koa different on the sidelines?
I think I coach them the same, if I'm being honest. Like, I see people as people, and so you coach to the person in front of you, and so I feel it's the same thing. I'm also like really enjoy a fun environment and a hard environment, a challenging environment, and so kids are very capable of that. And I want them to be the very best they can be, even though they're under 12s, but also have a real good time doing it. And so I feel like it's the same. I feel like it's definitely the same. You know, we're in it to win it. I'm not going to lie. It's not the nation over here, but they're going to come out of it the very best they can be and having a laugh and challenging themselves. And I think that's a really good thing. And so, yeah, I find coaching kids is really good for me because it reminds me of why I coach. You know, it fills my cup more than I'm filling theirs, because it's like their eyes lighting up when they get something, when they understand something, when they see the game or they see the moment. Like, you know, kids are so expressive. And so for me, it's just a massive cut, Phil. I've always tried to keep, like, to go back to coaching kids wherever I can along the journey. And so earlier this year, I coached the under 18 Bay of Plenty boys team, same concept for rugby, just to give back to age grades, to reconnect to that age, and to keep learning and pushing and growing myself. Different teams that you coach, different genders, different ages is always going to teach you something. And, you know, for me, it's really important to just keep reminding myself and keeping myself grounded of why I do this.
So one of the things that you also talked to Cody about was the concept of playing the long game in your coaching. So how do you approach long-term goals and development, both for yourself and for the teams that you're working with?
I think one of the biggest things is everyone's assumption that you want to be the Black Ferns coach right now. And so, you know, I've always, like, my younger self chased accolades. I chased accolades pretty much just one thing to the next to not have to stop and think, I think. That was me. But as I've got older, I'm like, man, I need to chase just being the very best coach I can be. And that doesn't, I'll find that wherever I go. Like, if I'm just unraveling how I act, how I react in certain situations, and how I grow and learn in certain situations. So I think all of those things will come when they're meant to come. If they do and if they don't, it doesn't matter. Like, for me, I'm just like, I just want to be the very best I can be. And if I approach every team I take with that mindset and not to get in the next job, then I'll be wherever I'm meant to be. And I feel like I'm really at a good place in my own head that I don't need a particular coaching job to, you know, to make me feel good or to, you know, reiterate that I'm good. I'm quite confident in who I am and what I bring to the table. And I'm just on a constant learning journey. I feel like I'm going to be an apprentice coach till I'm like 70.
We had a session yesterday here in Victoria with Mike Dunlap, who's involved with the Milwaukee Bucks for a long time. And he was doing a session with the state coaches from Victoria, which I was lucky being based in Victoria to be able to go to. And Mike said that anytime he walks in a room with coaches, he treats himself as the dumbest coach in the room, because he knows that these people, if he approaches it that way, there is always something that he can learn from the people in the room. And this is a guy that's been coaching for 3 decades of basketball at the highest level. And if he's able to kind of have that mindset of growth, I think everyone can. One of the areas of your coaching background was as a skills coach and a performance analyst. Now that you're kind of potentially having skills coach and performance analyst working with you, how do you incorporate those elements of player growth and coach analysis into your coaching methodology, having seen both sides of the coin?
Yeah, I was the analyst with the New Zealand Sevens and did skills coaching with them too. And it was brilliant to be like support staff and not head coach. Like, wow, that's a difference. Like, not like being in the in crew and like not traveling always with the team. And like, even that was like a real humbling experience. But from a head coach perspective, it like really gives you insight to, you know, how you could use the people around you better, or how you could dig into different knowledge. And so even with our analysts, like, I'll ask now all the time, what do you see that I don't, you know, because they're watching more minutes of the game more often than anyone else in the team. You know, what am I missing? What are you hearing? What are you seeing? Like, I think I ask more questions about analysts than I would have before I had been an analyst. And so that's really good. And then just how fast we can get content out. And so, you know, we're pretty much coming off field and content's up, and, you know, ideal world content on the sideline at training, like live. And so I've definitely got to a place where I'm like, how fast can we see the pictures again to pick up the learning? What does gold standard look like? And my expectations of how quickly we can move that to that place. Like, I went into the New Zealand Sevens role, had never been an analyst before, and then I'm like deep in learning how to live code with Sevens. You're live coding, so the girls are coming off the field and the footage is available post game, every game. And so I'd be on my beanbag at home while they're in Canada or something, or on the other side of the world, and I'm coding up, you know, every game, not just our games, but every other team's games, on the fly. And so, you know, learned to do that in a 6 month period. That was also awesome, sucking at something and then having to like learn under the pump with everyone's eyes on you. And I love watching the game. And so I'd be like flying the drone at Sevens training, yeah. And then one of the girls would get this awesome runaway and I'd be like looking at them and then I'd miss it. I was like, oh no, I've missed it on the drone. And the girls were like, they'd laugh. They'd be like, we always know if it's a real good try because you've missed it. Because you're watching.
You just get caught in the moment.
Yeah, I definitely know that I'm, you know, like it was a really good year to learn from a different lens, to watch from a detailed lens and a different side of the game, and it was real good growth for me. But I know that that's not where I'm meant to be. I know I'm not meant to be an analyst. And you know, I did have that role through to the Olympics, but I know that, you know, that was a great year for me, but I'm meant to be on the grass and I'm meant to be leading a team,
owning your space, Crystal.
Yeah.
What are one or two of the things that you know now that you wish you knew when you'd started coaching?
I reckon the best thing I ever learned is there's two types of coaches, one that's been fired and one that's going to get fired. I was like, that's probably my best advice. Like, when you stop trying to keep your job, you can be brilliant beyond words. And you can do everything right and still get fired. You can be everything they want you to be and still get fired, you know? And so I'm like, so you may as well just be yourself and like full noise, just be your best version instead of trying to be something everyone else wants you to be. Because in high performance world, like, it's unfair. Like, the reality is coaching is unfair. And there's going to be decisions that are made that are out of your control. So you might as well do it your way. Like, that would be my best advice. You're either being fired or you're going to get fired. And I was like, nah, I'll never get fired because I'm a good human and I care about the girls and I'm good at what I do. But yeah, I got fired. And, you know, and so I just think there's, that was good for me. And then
it's just removing that mental fear of failure, I suppose, and just understanding that as long as you do your best, then that's the most important thing. Yeah,
you've got to be able to look yourself in the mirror at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think when you remove that barrier, you coach in a way that's free and expressive in yourself. And you know, for me, I think I'm never wanted to try keep a job. I'm just going to go out and be myself and the, you know, what will happen. And I'm pretty, probably one of the things I know I'm very good at is the bounce back, is handling failure and coming through it and learning and growing and getting better. And so I feel like I could go to any, you know, I could be put through anything and come out the other end.
It's the line from the poem, you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test. If the guy in the glass is your friend, that's the like you said, if, as long as you can eyeball yourself, then that's the most important thing. Mm. Crystal, last question, the one that we ask everyone that comes on the podcast. If you could ask one coach, either with us or passed on, a question in any sport, who would the coach be and what would the question be?
I'm like a lover of John Wooden. He's definitely, like, as a young coach, I just idolized him. And I always think in coaching, I feel like coaching is a real is a real privileged pressure. And I always wonder, like, he was a school teacher, so I feel like he was still changing lives in a different way. I always wonder, should I be using my skill set for something more than sport? And so I don't know who I'd ask, because I feel like he changed multiple lives in different ways, but I feel like a guilt sometimes that I have a skill set that could do more. And I wonder, you know, is it selfish doing coaching, which I'm just deeply in love with? You know, my mum suffered from bipolar growing up, and I feel like I could work with youth of parents of mental health, or, you know, I've seriously considered going into the police force a number of times, you know, but coaching is the one, you know, it's the place in my life where I don't think about anything else but what's happening in the moment in front of me. So, I don't know who I'd ask the question to, but should I be doing something else, you know?
Crystal, that is genuinely, I reckon, we'd be, and I should probably know this, we'd be coming up to 50 episodes or something across 3.5 seasons doing this, and I reckon that might be a question you might not even need to specify who. I think that's just a question, I think, that is, you could ask any coach and I think you'd get a fascinating answer for. So thank you so much for giving up your time this morning as well to have this chat. It's been fascinating and amazing, and I think your attitude to coaching and your development as well is so empowering, and it just, like, you can tell, like you said, that you're meant to be on the grass, and your passion for not only your sport but for what the ultimate essence of coaching is, which is making your athletes better people and better players, is so strong, and it screams through in everything you do. And hopefully the people that are listening to this will think that you are not only an epic person but also an epic coach, because I definitely do. So thank you so much for giving up your time, and good luck for the rest of the season with the Chiefs and with the under-12s team in a couple of weeks at the tournament.
Thanks so much, Neil. I really loved today. Thank you. Put your hands up. Y'all get ready. And the crowd goes crazy. Yeah. And the crowd goes wild. About to see something so amazing.